When I was young, my family would regularly go to a local Presbyterian church. We kids didn't go to services, rather we went to Sunday school. And one day the group leader discussed heaven. It was a place so fantastic and so great that we should all want to go there. Of course, as a boy, that sounded intriguing. I was up for the adventure. She continued, "It was a place where choirs sang all the time," at which point I kind of recoiled and thought, "Ew, heaven sounds like a horrible place." I didn't have a terribly good impression of our church's choir at that time, but to this leader it must have meant something positive and good, or she might have been simply referring to the scriptural reference of choirs of angels. In the end, she had an idea of heaven based on her knowledge and experience, and I too had an idea of heaven, albeit one less developed. Now, just a few weeks ago, someone made a comment to me regarding heaven. He jokingly told me, "I know for certain that I'm going to heaven because my mom is a saint, and she'll be there, and she gets everything she wants." And honestly, I don't remember who told it to me, but it stuck, and indeed, it is a remarkable logical deduction. But that is not how this works, for a number of reasons. But the main reason that it doesn't work is that we tend to cast our assumptions about heaven being some place that has a basis of something here on earth, including our wants and our desires. That's nothing new. As I've stated many times in the past, St. Thomas Aquinas says that all of our knowledge comes from our senses, or through our senses. Even abstract concepts such as love or happiness or joy are derived from experiences that we obtain through our senses. So it stands to reason that we project our vision of heaven as some great earthly place based on our earthly knowledge and experience. Yet heaven isn't really like that at all. It's quite different, though we do get glimpses of it every now and then. Now, in Hollywood, there's this cosmic battle being played out between the MCU and the DCU, two competitive and unrelated entertainment giants. And you might not have heard of them through these acronyms, but I assure you they are very real, and their stakes are in the billions of dollars. For those of you that don't know, MCU stands for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and DCU stands for the DC Universe. And they have spawned such blockbuster films as The Avengers, The X-Men, Batman, Superman, and many others. Their battle started in the years 1939 and 1934, respectively. And nearly 80 years later, their rivalry is still as strong as ever. Of course, in the 1930s, the stakes weren't nearly so high, and the medium wasn't really film, it was publications. And more specifically, they were comic books. And it was these that captured my mind and attention in my childhood. I would regularly visit the comic book shops looking for new releases, and also to dig through the archives to see if anyone had dropped off or unloaded some unknown treasure. Of course, I am a bit embarrassed as an adult to say that I was enamored by comic books, but like many hobbies, it wasn't forever. And as it so happened, in junior high school, my father made me sell my entire collection. By today's standard, I'm sure it would be a small fortune. Actually, he didn't really make me sell it, but rather, he made me an offer of something better. You see, my school had started a computer science program, and I was drawn toward it. So my dad gave me a choice. I could buy a new computer with the sale of my comic book collection, and he would pony up the difference. Or I could keep the comics and not get a computer. Now, you have to realize that back in the day, a new computer was pretty expensive. And my father, recognizing an opportunity to leap from one stage to another, helped me to find my way. Of course, at the time, I was angry that I had to make this choice, but now, in retrospect, there really isn't any lingering regret. My attentions subsequently went whole hog into programming and operating systems, graphics design, word processing, and a slew of other things that computers are good at. This newfound love had little time for childhood fantasy reading anyway. So he was, in a way, helping me to wean off one thing and move on to something else. In his eyes, something a little more mature. And that was a good move because this computer put me on a path to having a very successful career in information technology, or IT. Now, in today's gospel, a group of Sadducees confront Jesus, trying to trick him. Throughout the gospels, sometimes it's the Pharisees that spar with Jesus, and other times it's the Sadducees. Not that this is terribly surprising, but Judaism, like many other faiths, had splintered into several groups, with these two being the most prominent. Fundamentally, they had the same roots, Mosaic Law, for instance. But the Sadducees didn't go anywhere beyond that. What was in the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, was it. Enough. Oral tradition and other rabbinical writings, including the rest of the Old Testament, did not have any force of law. And because there wasn't any development beyond the Torah, some of the later theological developments, such as heaven, resurrection, afterlife, and the immortality of the soul, simply did not exist. They didn't believe in those things. And as such, they tried to use reason to trap Jesus into fallacies or contradictions. Their example, as we read, was quite simple. If a woman has several husbands throughout her life, then at the resurrection, which husband will be hers? In heaven. Indeed, this scenario is a bit baffling if we think about it logically, and we might be tempted to consider that the Sadducees were right. But Jesus has no trouble dismantling this. As I have been pointing out, heaven is different from earth, and as such, our knowledge and constructs of the material world have little semblance to that of the spiritual world. Marriages, even though they are blessed and sacramental, they are still a construct for here on earth, for us, to give grace. In heaven, there is no marriage. Again, we have glimpses of heaven, but they're just that. Glimpses. Now, St. Thomas Aquinas tells us that man is unique among all of God's creatures. All creatures moved towards a telos, or an end. But only man does so, and according to his own free will. Animals behave in a sort of deterministic way that is governed by their type, their genus and species, instinct, if you will. And given the same set of circumstances, they'll behave in more or less the same way. Yet man, by gift from God, can determine his own course of action based on his intellect and use of reason. And the telos for man, or his end, well, that would be perfect fulfillment. We seek perfect happiness. That's what I want, and that's what all of us want. The trouble is, how many of us are finding it, and how many of us are looking in the right place? All of us go through life seeking it, starting from ground zero with no knowledge of anything. But Jesus tells us through St. Thomas that this cannot be found in wealth. It can't be found in fame. It cannot be found in glory. It cannot be found in honor. It cannot be found in power. For obvious reason, it is not in the goods of the body, life, health, strength, beauty, agility, because we all age. It cannot be found in pleasure, either bodily or intellectual. In other words, there is nothing here on earth, nor is there anything that we can create that will give us perfect happiness. Oh, we can say that any of these things are good, and they are, but are they sustainable? Do they last? And even if they do last for a while, do we get tired or bored of them? Only the uncreated good can be the ultimate end of man. And this uncreated good is God. But our union with God is not like anything on earth. It's not like a fun party. It's not like being in a car that goes from 0 to 60 in 3.7 seconds. It's not like having more than the Joneses, our neighbor. Nothing of this world and nothing created of this world will satisfy us. Yet we know that there's good out there, and we act to achieve it. And sometimes we even sin to achieve it, right? Bank heists are usually done because the thieves think that money will make them happy. We confuse sex as an equivalent of love, and we get that wrong. Nothing of this world and nothing created in this world will satisfy. Man's ultimate happiness resides in heaven, which until the general resurrection is in the realm of the intellect, the soul. In other words, our bodies are not in heaven, nor are they needed. Yet almost all pleasure of which we are aware are connected to our bodies. Salted caramel tastes good only if we have a mouth and a tongue. Climbing a mountain is exhilarating only if we have a functioning body to achieve it. Winning any sort of competitive sports requires a body to go through the motions. You see, our reference point, our bodies, inform our intellect of what is good. Yet there are things that hint to goodness beyond our bodies. Now, the hints and glimpses that I've alluded to at least three times always come when we love, actually love. God imprinted this on our hearts and we are drawn to it. Each time we love unselfishly or unconditionally, we taste the fruits of heaven. My love of comic books was so easily ditched because the love did not express itself to someone else. And even when I matured, became educated, and then achieved a career with great gusto, it fell prey to the same end. It wasn't until I entered religious life and became drawn to the mission of preaching the gospel that I started to understand more fully, but even yet still not completely, God's desire for us to love more deeply. Husbands and wives do the same for each other, especially when they have children in their midst. Nobody knows self-sacrifice better than parents, which is good because children, by their mere existence, help their parents get to heaven. You may not know it, and it definitely does not always seem like it, but who else do you love unconditionally but your children when they've fallen and you must pick them up? And yet, who can put a price tag on snuggling with them? In heaven, strange as it may seem, our earthly attachments go away. It's not because what we've left behind wasn't important, but rather we have achieved perfect happiness with God. Like me and my comic book collection, and me and my career, they were necessary to get me to the next phase. And of those previous things, I still have fond memories. And I hope and I pray that I'll ultimately reach that place when my time here is done. And who knows? the choirs of angels might actually sound good.